7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 5 of Color of Magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and our other host here is Brian Allen. How you doing, man?
Episode 5? Has it been 5 weeks already?
I know, it's crazy, right? I don't know if it's more exciting that we made it to episode 5 or that people want to keep listening to us after 5 episodes.
Both are exciting and a little shocking.
You're telling me. So, dude, like, this is wild. Like, it feels like every week we keep having more and more magic news. You know, I don't know if this is something Wizards is doing purposely to kind of just keep themselves relevant in the news every day, or if it's just giving us cool things to talk about and make content creation easier.
Yeah, whatever the reason, we appreciate it.
So, yeah, for those of you who don't know, we had a really cool event here in the Seattle area last weekend. Actually, not even last weekend. Yesterday, as of this recording, was the Chalice. It's a cool charity event. The charity they were raising money for is a group called Serious Fun, which is super awesome. They have 30 locations around the world, and they do these kind of camps, kind of think like summer campy sort of stuff for kids with all types of disabilities, and it's fantastic. Like, they had one of the most tear-jerking videos they put together that we ran a couple of times during the stream, but it was fantastic. We streamed all day yesterday. We raised $66,000, I believe, was the final total. $61,000. Okay. Yeah, and the goal was 40. So that we crushed that. It was the second year it was run. We previously had 8 magic content creators of all types that were there last year. This year we doubled it to 16, and it was awesome. I mean, we had so many cool moments on camera. We have some footage that I'm hoping they get put up soon, where we had little Dana Fisher trying to teach, I believe it was Cube April, how to floss.
All right.
It was fantastic. I think there's footage of me and TJ doing some high kicks between rounds, kind of like Rocket style. Like, it was a mess. It was super, super fun. We even have a cool clip that I shared over on my Twitter account that you can see of Megan from Good Luck High Five actually commandeering an Oko in the block party format, which was fantastic. Like, that was just a cool moment on camera. It was like the best moment we were going to have all day, going right into that format. But yeah, the list of people were awesome. We had the professor there, Chris Van Meter, who works for Card Kingdom producing all their stuff and our exclusive products. And he's actually kind of a former pro player. We had people from the Lorgoifs would do all the cool like magic history and stuff. MTG Nerd Girl was there. We had both halves of Good Luck High Five. One was playing, okay, and Maria was on coverage. Dana was there, obviously. The Krim, the Agent Avenger, he was there from MTG Goldfish. Melissa DeToro was there. Brad Nelson and Brian Bronduin, who were in the MPL. Like, it was just Ryan Spain was there. Ashlyn Rose, Graham Stark from Loading Ready Run, Tappy Toe Claws, who's a cosplayer online. Like, it was just, it was crazy. It was funny because, like I was saying off the air, like, I looked around because we did dinner afterwards, kind of hung out and everybody got familiar and did some networking. And I had the thought of, like, if this building collapsed right now, we would lose like probably 300 hours of magic content a week just goes away. Like,
man, the websites are like, don't even joke about the content. The content creators vanishing.
And it's probably even more than that, right? But it was crazy to just look around and see how much positivity was in that room. You know, to see that the magic community had come together with all these people, all these personalities, people from all over the country. And the cool part was, it was, you know, for like much as we talk about, we do lack diversity in the group. You know, we had a bit, you know, it was at least 50% female, which was awesome.
That's awesome. Because, again, our actual number in, you know, magic sales is what?
Well, sales is like 30%, you know, and actual play is like 3%.
So, yeah. So that is awesome. So, yeah,
that was awesome. So, yeah, that was cool. It helped us line up a future guest. So we'll have that in a couple weeks.
That's really the part we're concerned about, is how many guests did you get out of this, Watson? That's great exactly. That you raised almost $70,000 for charity. How does this affect me? It's really
good. Well, work. Well, you still have work coming, I'll tell you that.
All right, good to know. But seriously, but yeah, though, congratulations on that. That is incredible.
Yeah, it was really fun. Goal. You know, and credit to Lila Ross. She was the one in charge of the Engage team there at Card Kingdom that puts all that together. It's a multi-month project. It took a lot of people. It was all of the content creators out there raising money. Like, it was cool. I mean, it was a super fluid tournament. It ran great. Everything was on time. You know, we were able to have good interaction. Matter of fact, I got to even say, the chat was even great on stream. We only had one person we had to put in timeout at all during the day. And that was fantastic.
Somebody that streams on Twitch about 50, 60 hours a week, that's a milestone in and of itself, that you only had to timeout one person.
Oh, for sure. Phenomenal. You know, and especially considering they had 350 to 400 people pretty much steady all day. Like, that's pretty awesome. But they also gave away, we did giveaways for these cool new Letterman style jackets they're going to have with the Card Kingdom logo. There was a bunch of gift bags they gave out that had a bunch of stuff. There was a whole bunch of stuff on eBay, which I think those auctions raised like $6,000. Like, it was awesome. I mean, I would love to see the community come together for more charity projects like that if we were able to.
Oh, and by the way, if people want to know more about Serious Fun, do we have some links for them?
Yeah, I'll
some...
put the links in the show notes. So if anybody wants to follow up, or if you just want to go and just make a donation, it's a incredibly awesome cause. And you might want to bring a napkin or a tissue with you, because, man, their video is definitely a tearjerker. It's up there with them, like, Sarah McLachlan videos you used to see late night with the one-eyed cats and stuff. Yeah, it's like that, man.
Why
I mean, it gets you.
Why won't you adopt me?
Yeah, when you get the, what is it, the Wings of an Angel playing in the background or whatever.
Man.
Yeah, it's that, man. And those videos used to kill me, because they would always come on late night when I was watching, like, a comedy special on Comedy Central. And then you go to commercial break and just kill my mood. And I'm like, that's it. I'm done. Like, and that's coming from a person like all of our pets are rescues. I married a former zookeeper. Like, we're all in on the animals. And even then, I'm just like, man, why now? Why now?
I did not know she was a former zookeeper. There's some kind of Matt Damon movie that's probably coming soon, starring I don't know who he's playing now that I think about it, but he's
somewhere. I have so many stories. They're way off topic, but we can talk about it another time.
We'll put a pin in that, as they say.
I'll say this. That was fun. We did that. We played some standard. We played some block party. Super fantastic. Partly because our standard format did not look like a lot of other standard that people are playing. We had, and I will say this, like, there were a couple of, you know, the standard food decks or whatever, but people did bring a variety of stuff that worked out great. Honestly, we even have it on camera where I think Brad Nelson was playing a Selesnya adventure deck, and he just went wide to the point that the Oko decks couldn't even deal with it. I mean, doesn't do them any good to turn something into a food if you're just making four or five guys, you're casting March of the Multitudes and making another eight guys. Like, eventually you just attack through and there's nothing, because they don't play board sweepers.
No.
Yeah, so there's some options. I think Oko's still upsetting people, rightfully so. But yeah, there's a lot of Oko, a lot of Nissa. I think we saw a lot of that in the Mythic Championship qualifier over the weekend with all the deck lists that came out. And more people generally aren't happy. I'd say if you like follow Twitter right now, like, Magic Twitter is rough at the moment.
people on Twitter complaining about things you say, I find this hard to believe.
But they're rarely complaining in unison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the issue we have right now, is that it's upsetting enough. And it's weird, because I don't know if part of the issue is people building decks that they just see are good and kind of like stifling their own creativity. Because, like I said, even at this event we just ran, there were a few different decks that actually dealt with some of the Oko decks. So, I mean, it can be done.
Yeah.
And I have a Jund deck that I'm messing with right now on Arena. and getting some decent results. So, I mean, it's doable, but I mean, how hard are you having to work to make it happen? Like, exactly. Also the question is, does a mid-level or mid-range, not mid-range, mid-level, semi-competitive, casual player, are they able to get to a point comfortably where they can even remotely feel competitive? Or is it only possible if you have that higher level skill?
I was just about to say, what Brad Nelson can get away with and what I can get away with are two entirely different sets of Magic cards for the most part.
Yeah, but I think that's a good point. I'm not saying, you know, here that the game should be super easy, but I think if it's so difficult that somebody that doesn't have tournament level skills can't decipher it, it becomes really, really disheartening for them and discouraging. Because even if they can't win, if they can see the path or they see enough other people doing it, then that makes sense to them and they can see a way to get there. But if you see like the best players, even just for lack of a better term, just like copping out and just building Oko decks, then they're just going like, oh, well, this is what everybody's doing. I'm never going to have a chance. So I don't know where we're headed. I don't know what we're banning. I was following some tweets earlier today and saw that there were some conversations about, if you don't ban Oko, are there things you can just do to Planeswalkers? Which is a very productive discussion, I think. Do you just restrict Planeswalkers to where they're automatically just one per deck? Like, that's a cool idea. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything. You can still play with them. You just get one instead of four. I mean, I could get behind that. There were some other talks about, you know, are there certain ways maybe they deal damage? Or do you restrict the first use they have to only a minus ability on the turn they come into play? Like, there's all these cool different ideas I saw people pitching. But part of the issue, too, is maybe we experiment with what do these decks look like if they don't have Nissa, but they still have Oko.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, because Nissa's a powerful card, still gets played in decks even where you're not playing Oko, because Nissa's just damn good. That's a different way you look at it. So, I mean, we're in an interesting spot right now, because you had a lot of decks that had main deck Noxious Grasp, you know, to be able to deal with Nissa and Oko. There were other decks that were playing main deck Veil of Summers, knowing that other people are going to play main deck Noxious Grasp. So, we're kind of getting to that level 3 poker. We're like, okay, well, he knows that I know he has this card. Well, okay, well, now he knows that I know that he knows that I have this card. So it's like, yeah, it's getting kind of silly. I don't know if that's where we really want to be.
Magic has achieved full Princess Bride singularity. Nice.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at, really. That's a good way to look at it. And it's kind of crazy. I mean, I think one of the things we're seeing, too, is kind of the effect of Arena in some cases, where we're developing decks faster, and it's also easier for people to build the decks with the expensive cards. So you're going to see more of it, even when it's beatable, because it's the easiest answer that they've seen a lot of. So, you know, as an example, people can just go craft four Okos if they want, build that deck, start playing it, because you probably have a majority of the other cards, or you can get them fairly easily. But
just do some quests. You got it, you know.
Yeah, Brad's deck was fantastic against it. But you're not seeing as many people play that deck. So do more people just play the Oko deck? Because, you know, top of mind, that's what you see. I'll build that, start playing it. Because, you know, say I'm a lower skilled player. I don't know any better. People say this is the best deck. If I want to rank up and have a chance to qualify, I'm just going to play that as the best deck. So it's a weird thing. It's kind of like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, Oko is a powerful card, and it is an annoying card. So people complaining about it, rightful to do so. But some of it, I think, is just also, like, top of mind, what have you done for me lately? You know, perception being greater than reality in some cases. So I don't really... The real problem with Oko, I would say, even beyond just the power level of the card, is that it's so good that it's infiltrated every format.
This is, yeah. We have definitely seen that. Even the formats are coming up just now. Brand new formats.
Well, yeah, people are already trying to figure out where does it fit in Pioneer. You know, we've only known about that format for a week. But it's shown up in Legacy decks. It's shown up in Vintage decks. I mean, like, when a card is that good right off the bat, you know, we're talking a month after the set released, and it's showing up in all these formats, in multiple decks in some cases in those formats. yeah, it's probably time to start thinking about what do we do about this card.
I know I'm in the minority as somebody, you know, that's probably looking not just at the, you know, the competitive and the various formats, but just, hey, you know, the storyline, the lore, especially since we're coming with a TV show. Who are these people? I'm thinking, like, I can't, part of me wants the Planeswalkers to be a little ridiculous because these are the main characters of the story. I want everything to kind of, you know, I want to know when the Planeswalkers arrive. I want entrance music. I want, you know, pyro. So this is, you know.
I feel you. Like, they're key characters, right? Like, so we want them to be important, and we want people to have those big tournament moments on camera with those characters. But I think at the same time, we don't necessarily want them dominating the game, right? Like, you don't want them to be so good that they create a sub game that has no cost to enter. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay, I'm playing this thing for 3 mana to create this whole protect the queen scenario. Like, that's not really what you want the game to turn into. Especially in the case of Oko, where he has an insane amount of loyalty and he's just there forever. Like, the games I win generally against Oko is most of the time I just ignore it. I mean, it sounds crazy. Yeah, but it's like, I'm playing aggro, I'm playing bigger creatures, I'm playing creatures that have +1/+1 counters, so if you turn something into an elk, it's going to be a 4/4 or 5/5 anyway. Let's just go for it and just see if I could race them down. Maybe hit an Embercleave or something. I mean, I say it. I ignore it with
you
the
You just wanted to mention Embercleave. We know.
Well, of course. I got to get that in. It's 4 weeks in a row. I got to mention it, right?
Yep.
No, but seriously, if I have something like a Noxious Grasp or something that I can get rid of them in one shot, then I'll probably do it. But otherwise, I just keep going at the opponent. I mean, because his loyalty is so ridiculous, you can't let him turn into a force field for 2 turns or 3 turns while you're trying to attack it down. So it's a crazy time. I will be following many discussions this week, and it'll be interesting to see if Wizards post anything about it in the next few days, you know, kind of with the complaints coming to a fever pitch.
Now, I'm sure you saw a bunch of games this past weekend. Do you feel like people are going to the face when they need to be, or is that a thing you think people have picked up? Or
I don't know. I mean, like, again, I don't know if maybe that's even the strategy. It may just really come down to your deck, because if I was playing something that went really wide with a bunch of tokens or whatever, then maybe I do attack Oko because I have the bodies I can throw away if they do block a couple of them. If I'm playing more mid-rangey and I can just go tall, then maybe I just try to trample over or just keep punching directly to the face. I mean, it would probably just have to be dependent on the deck call, you know. But as more people start playing more black, now that we talked about last week, you know, some of your spot removal matters now. If they are going to main deck Noxious Grass, that's a thing. You have Murderous Rider that you can use now. So there are some choices, but, you know, we just have to kind of see where things end up. I don't really know. Oh, speaking of Pioneer, since we mentioned that earlier, have you thought about building a deck for that format yet?
I have, and I have no idea really what I want to do that wouldn't just be like, hey, I've already got some Throne of Eldraine stuff. I don't know. I got Eldraine on the brain, I think. So this is I play Standard. Occasionally, I play Commander. I got to branch out more. I know.
Well, I feel you. You know, I had a lot of people asking me already, what would I build for Pioneer if I were to play? Truthfully, I don't know. I think it's in a weird spot because we know a lot of cards are going to get banned, right? All the stuff you're seeing early on are people just building with all the absurd over-the-top cards that were banned because they were too powerful in Standard. Some even in Modern, but they are legal right now in Pioneer. And I think as that starts to shake out a little bit, then I'll be more inclined to build a deck. I'm not too worried about purchasing cards because I still have a lot of that stuff just sitting around in boxes and trade binders from like the first go round when I had them, because I'm being rewarded for laziness because I just never got rid of them. But I think for me, it's just more about the time. Like, I don't want to put the effort into building 2 or 3 decks and like testing them out. And Lord knows I'm not going to go play Magic online. So any of my testing will be real paper Magic. And that just takes time. I don't know if I want to put it in knowing that the cards I use will likely end up not being legal by the time I want to play in one of the Grand Prix or something. Or I'm going to be building to fight some of those cards, which will end up being banned. So then I'll have to rebuild my deck anyway. So on those bases, I'm probably out. But yeah, otherwise, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, there's a lot of people that are at least interested in the early going. I'm excited because my collection's worth more money. But beyond that, I don't really know where I'm going to sit on it. I do see that there's a ton of content. I've seen people talking about adding Pioneer channels to their Discord chats. I've seen people talking about new podcasts that have already started up about Pioneer. So there's a lot of activity around it, and people are at least excited about it. And that's a bonus, especially right now with all the other complaints people have had.
We're content creators. We love any kind of new format because of podcasts and content YouTube channels. It's great. Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot out there already. I mean, it was I want to say it's impressive how fast people jumped on it. But the reality is, I think I expected it. Because truthfully, I honestly feel like if I didn't have a day job, I probably would have done something too, like within 2 hours of the announcement. Yeah. So I'm kind of glad I do, because other people beat me to it and I didn't need to waste the other like 1 hour of my day I have left over at this point.
People at this point, we kind of, you know, I think people understand the process. It was like the process about, oh, look, card values are increasing. We've seen how these scenarios work. We've been through all these various gold rushes and booms and things before. So yeah,
and it's all kind of cyclical at different points in Magic. I mean, things come and go. There's peaks and troughs. So even this whole thing with like Oko and whatever, like, yeah, it's tough. It's a problem, but I mean, we've seen this before in the past. Everything gets shaken out sooner or later. Everything gets figured out, and then we get back to just playing Magic and things being ridiculous. You know, we're about to be coming up on another Mythic Championship here, I think on the weekend of the 8th. We're going to have, also, I think that's where they're going to tell us about the Mystery Booster thing, so that's going to be news. I mean, so we'll be talking about whatever is in that booster once that set list or whatever gets released. Then we'll be rolling into Grand Prix that will include the Pioneer format. And even between then, I just saw that we had the first results, the first 5-0 results from Magic Online with Pioneer as well. So it's just going to be constant. I mean, we're on it right now. So this is a good time to be a Magic player, even with all the ridiculousness going on in Standard. I think there's just so much stuff, so much content, so much positivity outside of that one Oko situation right now that I think it's great.
And it's great to be a creator also, because if all else fails, we can just, we get content and we get to sit back and watch the.
Yeah, you can watch the fire burn a little bit. So yeah, you also mentioned that maybe we should cover the Hasbro stock situation.
Because that's what people came to our podcast for, is stock tips. That's what I heard. I'm getting my...
Well, I don't know if I have stock tips. I have some perspective that, you know, maybe I can give. They did their, I guess, quarterly announcement. And with the news, you know, some sales they had expected were down a little bit in a few categories. And their stock dropped, of course. But I think there were some people reading into it a little too much. I do remember reading some stuff on Reddit where people were kind of like, oh no, this is going to be a thing. They're going to come after Magic and expect this, that, and the other. And for context, I think you have to understand too where Hasbro was like a year ago. Because this is one of the problems I've always had, even when I was younger, that I didn't really understand this whole thing about, oh, well, you got to do better than last year and you got to do this thing. And like, even if sales are only up 1%, people are mad because it's not enough because you went up 15% the year
3%.
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things there. They're like, for instance, with Hasbro, we're coming off of a 2-year stretch where they had pretty much the most ridiculous set of board games that had viral reach. So they had, what is it? Speak Out, where you had that weird mouthpiece thing.
Yeah.
That was on like every talk show and whatever. You had the weird one where you're hitting the button and you have the gymnast that you're trying to get to pop off and land on his feet or whatever. Then there was Pie Face that they had that was still selling well into last year. There was like 4 or 5 games like that. So that was propping up their, what they call, I believe, the game division. you know, which is mostly just different types of board games. And those are not selling now. Like, those aren't a thing. Even hobby retailers that traditionally sell, like, what we call hobby board games, like Settlers of Catan, stuff like that, you know, usually your Magic stores, they were trying to carry some of those games because they were so hot. Most of them I talk to now will tell you they haven't moved one of those in 6 months. So those sales went away. That's just part of the business, you know, but if you're a shareholder and whatever,
yeah,
you know, you don't care about excuses. You want answers effectively. That said, Magic's already doing extremely well. Arena's already clearing expectations. Obviously, they have another set coming, so they will hit their numbers and beyond for the fourth quarter of this year. We already know that they have the Magic TV series on Netflix coming out next year. So there are little things they can do here or there, maybe make $1 million here, $2 million there, but ultimately, I think Wizards and Magic already have a game plan. Like, D&D is even doing well. D&D has streaming every day of the week now if you go onto the D&D Twitch channel.
Absolutely.
So they're driving revenue and they're doing well. I think it'll be more about other internal things at Hasbro kind of, I don't guess, getting their act together, but, you know, coming up with new things or new promotions or whatever. So, yes, will they turn to Magic to try to get a little more? Probably. That's just the nature of business. But I wouldn't see that doing a whole lot for pushing further than we already are at this point. There's already a lot in the works and a lot lined up.
In that vein, and we did talk about the TV show briefly, I've seen some of, you know, the stories and the speculation. Is there a Stranger Things effect on D&D? Have you seen that at all? Is that a real thing? I've heard people talk about it.
I believe there was in year one of Stranger Things, but I don't think it necessarily is now. I think it's just a continuation. Okay. We now have, because it's not just Stranger Things. I mean, D&D got featured in the show The Librarians. It's been like pretty much almost every geek show, I would say. They have Magic or D&D kind of in the background, or somebody's talking about it, or they're making references to it. They're just kind of having a little bit of a renaissance. You know, you also see other celebrities now coming out talking about playing these games, and that's kind of helping the brands a bit too. So, yeah, I think there was a little bit from Stranger Things, and I think they even made early this year, there was a kind of Stranger Things themed box that was a D&D adventure.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that at, I think it was the local Barnes & Noble. So yeah, the most mainstream place you can walk into, I guess, in terms of buying board games.
Yeah, the thing for me that was disappointing was just that Stranger Things, at least so far, you know, no spoilers, obviously, because I'm the last person on Earth who hasn't seen the full Stranger Things season 3. I'm like 4 or 5 episodes in. But I really was hoping they would do more D&D type thing. More treat it kind of like Smallville, where like the contaminant is there or whatever got through the void or whatever and created other monsters, and maybe the kids find a creative way to deal with some new D&D theme style monster or something. Would have been cool. But we're still kind of fighting a lot of the same at this point, and that's a little bit disappointing. But anyway, there's your Stranger Things update and how all Daquan right. is actually behind on, I don't know, pop culture.
That's what's great about Netflix, though, is you can be the last person. It's easy to, when you got time to binge watch all of Breaking Bad, you can do that.
Man, I won't even get started. I think I've seen like an episode of Breaking Bad.
You kids today, y'all don't know the struggle of having to track down VHS tapes and stuff like that.
Set your VCR and hope you have enough tape left to get through the episode by the time you get home or whatever. Yeah, that wasn't a fun time.
The struggle was real. Y'all got no idea. Now you can just sit there and, which, with that said, I still miss Saturday morning cartoons and just the whole phenomenon of getting up at 6, 8. No matter what time they put the Super Friends on, me and my cousin were getting up at that time. 4 a.m.? All right, we're watching Superman at 4 a.m.
See, here's the thing, though. When you talk about that stuff and you listen to people complain about, oh, well, this thing's just a money grab and these guys are just marketing to this thing. Like, do people not realize when we were growing up, every one of those was just an extended infomercial for toys at Walmart?
You tell me,
like, every one of them.
What?
Yeah, literally. Like,
oh, my God.
There was a new Transformer in the TV show. 1 week later, that thing was on the shelf at Walmart.
for $30 in 1982.
Yeah, always.
$30 in 1982, buddy. Which basically mean you ain't getting that till Christmas. Is basically what. And that is
even the
house.
Generic bad ones like GoBots, like GI Joes.
GoBots.
Like a strawberry shortcake. Like all that. Like they all just had toys and they were just marketing to us. So it's so amusing to watch people talk about that with like nostalgia. But then any random thing as adults today, they're like, oh, I can't believe they're just doing that to make more money. Or I can't believe they're just marketing this thing. And I'm like, wait, but you just went and bought another He-Man shirt.
Yeah.
Or a Thundercats thing.
You were always supposed to be respectful, but when grandma got you a GoBot, because she's grandma, how could she know any better? You cried. You tried to keep the tears inside till you got home. But
I think every poor kid at some point, you got like that 5-pack of GoBots because they were so cheap. They always came with multiples.
Yep.
And you would just stare, and they didn't even transform. They just had the face on the underside.
Yeah.
And you just flip the legs and the feet out. It wasn't quite the same experience.
No.
That's sad. Like, only the old guard listening to this are probably going to get that. If you don't know, go look up GoBots and see how sad the people's faces are that are playing with them. Like, you'll understand then what we're talking about. Oh, hey, so that's the doorbell. That means we have a guest this week. Yeah, so this is awesome. Who do we have this week? It looks like we actually have guests all the way from Hawaii, which this is going to be fantastic. They actually run a youth program that actually uses magic as the focus, which is super sweet. And they've been doing this for a little while now. So definitely want to hear about this thing and kind of let people know what they're doing. So yeah, we've got Sean and Michael all the way from Hawaii. So we're even in way different time zones. How's it going, guys?
Good, man. How's it going with you guys?
It's going good.
This is great. It's kind of the end of the day for me. This is right at the end of the workday for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Good old 5:30.
Yeah.
Knock it out before dinner time.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we get to grading papers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys, in addition to doing the youth program, you're teachers as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you guys give everybody a little bit of a background about kind of how this came about?
Okay, so I have been basically playing Magic since I was like 9, 10.
Awesome.
I guess it was like around when Urza's Saga was the most recent set, somewhere in that ballpark. And, you know, I started out playing real casual at first, and then once I found out about the JSS or the Junior Super Series, I just like moved all in on wanting to play competitive Magic. So for those of you unfamiliar with the Junior Super Series, because it's been dead for many, many years now.
Yeah, for about 15 years.
Listening to this.
Yeah. Yeah, just about that, I think. It is a tournament series that was run by Wizards of the Coast, and it was basically for youth players. The age cutoff varied depending on what year it was, but it was when I was playing, it was 16 and under, and it paid out scholarship money. So if you want a local qualifier, you won $1,000 and you qualified for nationals, and then you would go to nationals, and I think like the top finishing players won more scholarship money. So like once I found out about that, I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. They got my parents on board with supporting my hobby. And I basically spent 3 years of my life trying to win JSS nationals. I did end up coming in fourth place my last year that I was eligible.
That's still really good, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed at the time because I definitely punted in the match that knocked me out of the top eight. But yeah, it was my proudest accomplishment up to that point. You know, I was like spending all day every day playing Magic, and so I just like kept going, and I probably spent like the next 10 to 12 years of my life just like always taking every shot that I could to qualify for the Pro Tour. So like that program, the Junior Super Series, it basically like allowed me access to this community that I fell in love with. I ended up like growing up in the community. And to this day, you know, I still talk about Magic all the time with my friends, all my closest friends, you know, I met through the Magic community. So I owe a lot of that to the Junior Super Series. So what is it? We've been doing this for like 3 years now.
3 years, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So about 3 years ago, I guess about 4 years ago, I came back from my most recent pro tour, scrubbed out of it, and basically said to myself, like, well, it's time to either double down on this or it's time to readjust your priorities. And so I decided to focus a little more on my relationship and spend a little more time working on my teaching practice. And so I had to step away from competitive magic. Anyone that has been as focused as I was on trying to qualify for the Pro Tour, like, it's almost a full-time job, just like the amount of prep you have to put in, the amount of like content you have to consume, the amount of reps you have to get in, and then just like playing in PTQs, that's like a 10 to 12 hour commitment every weekend.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's something a lot of people don't realize about almost any type of competitive gaming, especially where if you are trying to be at the upper echelon, like, you have to put in a lot of time. You almost have to give up other hobbies and things to put that time into being better and craft your skill at that one thing.
Yeah, I'm not really playing super competitively now, but even like I teach senior English right now, and my students ask me all the time, like, oh, mister, do you play video games? And I'm like, sorry, I really only have enough time to play Magic, and even then it's not as much as I would like. So, like, I haven't had another hobby since I quit playing WoW, like, 12 years ago.
Yeah, that's not too, you can balance WoW and exactly. Anything else. It's gonna be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I once knew somebody that actually couldn't make it to their raids for 2 weeks because they were studying for finals and had an exam, and they got sent a form letter from their guild that they were evicted from the guild for not making it to like 2 weeks worth of raids.
Wow.
Yeah, where'd they do that at?
It's supposed to be fun, right?
So I wasn't even like playing WoW super competitively. I was just playing for fun. But at the time it was like consuming my life, and I realized I needed to stop. And so I did. And then I got back on Magic. Yeah.
If I've heard that tale once, I think I've heard it 1,000 times.
I feel like many people in the community can probably resonate with that. But to bring it back, like, playing competitive Magic is basically at that level, right? Like, playing in PTQs every weekend, all the prep, like, it's a lot. So I put it on the back burner, but still wanted to like be involved in the Magic community, try and give back. And so I started this project. The beginnings of it was really at Pro Tour Kaladesh, which was the last time the Pro Tour came to Hawaii.
Okay.
I had already done like because for a while they were coming to the islands like every 2 or 3 years. So, geez, what was the Pro Tour that was here before Kaladesh? Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir. So Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir, I had set up like a field trip for, I was running like an after school club for gaming. And so I set up a field trip to bring a bunch of kids there at Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir.
That had to be fun for them.
Oh yeah. It was only a handful of kids that came, but they were just like blown away because they got to like go to backstage, like see the Sunday stage where like they have all the cameras and the lights. And then, like, Wizards was great, and they gave them a bunch of free stuff. So, like, the kids had a blast. And so
that's cool.
When they came back for Pro Tour Kaladesh, I got in touch with the same people, set up another field trip, had more kids come this time. And then shortly after that, I kind of just was like, hey, let's try and make something bigger out of this. And so Pro Tour Kaladesh was, like, that October. And then we ran our first youth tournament the following January. So
that's not that long between those. I mean, that's just a couple months.
Yeah, like, luckily, when I started trying to get this project underway, there were already, like, little pockets of other gaming or Magic clubs on the island. So it was, my job at the time was, like, working for this nonprofit that was running after school clubs. So I had like a fairly flexible schedule. A big part of my job was already networking with teachers. And so it was really kind of a natural extension for me to just like reach out to all these people. I was like, hey, I hear that you're like working in this space. Do you want to like tell your kids about these youth tournaments? You know, let's try set something up. And so we started running, we ran our first youth tournament that January. What was that? Like, it's 2019 now. So that was January 2017. Yeah, 2017.
17,
right? Yeah.
Oh,
because I think our
time
first,
flies.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of the first time I sent the kids off.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you guys, like, how hard is it to organize events on the islands? Like, because I'm sure there's people from different islands that may have places to play or stores or may be interested, but how do you coordinate that on a regular basis?
So we're on the island of Oahu, which is kind of like the main, if you've ever visited yeah. Hawaii, you've probably visited Oahu. That's the one with like Waikiki and Honolulu and Pearl Harbor and all of that. And so like Honolulu is the biggest city in the state. And so like, of all the places in Hawaii that kind of have a strong community to tap into, we probably have the strongest. And so when it comes to like scheduling the tournaments, like the LGSs were more than willing to be like, yeah, please, like, we want to support this in whatever way we can. We'll schedule a tournament for you guys. Yeah, we'll donate some prize support. You know, basically they were bending over backwards to try and help us make it happen. Probably the hardest part.
Yeah, that's, you're in their best interest because you're a recruiting program for future customers.
yeah, essentially. I think one of the owners, when I first approached him, he was like, yes, a rising tide lifts all boats. Whatever I can do to help you. So
that's
yeah,
great.
Getting them on board,
not everybody realizes that.
Yeah. Well, we have a pretty close knit community here. So, there is a little bit of rivalry between the shops, but nothing like, I don't know. I imagine it could be pretty bad if some shops were cutthroat, but luckily here in Hawaii, we don't really have too much of that.
Cool.
But I'd say the hardest part of planning all of this is just getting the kids to not only know about and care about it, but also physically getting them to the tournaments.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, you know, you obviously get them interested, but then when it comes tournament time, you know, what is your attendance like? How big are your crowds? And what are your difficulties getting people to and from the events?
Mike can probably talk to us about that. So Mike, he's been involved with the project from the beginning. Once we started running youth tournaments, he kind of went all in and officially started a dedicated magic club at the elementary school he teaches at. And now they are probably the strongest club on the island, just in terms of like consistent kids coming to tournaments, putting up finishes and that. And stuff like that. And in large part, it's because Mike has done so much of the legwork in terms of communicating with parents and physically driving the kids to tournaments. So,
for like the kids, it just continue talking to the parents, letting them know that, hey, you know, there's an opportunity for the kids to, you know, socialize with other people. And it's they get to try a new card game. And at the same time, like, I always mention to him, it's a better alternative than like staying home playing video games on social media and stuff.
Yeah. So a lot of the parents have said like getting their kids off of screen time is a big incentive for them to support this hobby.
So, oh, I can only imagine.
Like parents, especially at this one, like they're willing to take their kids out. So like when you're referring to your question about tournament attendance, the first time I had my kids come out, we had like 16 players. So now it's between like,
that's still pretty good for a first attempt, though.
Yeah,
absolutely.
When was that? 18, I think. 2018. Their first. It was in January. I had 12 kids come out of 16.
That was the first scholarship.
Okay.
No. That was the first time. That's the one of the regular tournaments.
Oh, the first time you brought them to a regular tournament. Okay.
But then like, now I think a turn or is it average around 8 to 12, I think.
Yeah. And like sometimes, you know, we'll put a tournament on the calendar and we'll only get like 6 or 8 kids to show up, and like 4 to 6 of those kids are all from Mike's club. Whatever he's doing in his club of just like having them focus on the game, having them work on the format. We play standard popper, which we can talk more about later. But having them focus on the format. And then I think just doing a good job of getting them all mutually excited. Because what I found is the number one thing that'll get a kid to show up to a tournament on the weekend that's not at their school is if their friend is going to go.
Oh, most definitely. Nobody wants to be the one person doing the thing by themselves or like looking like a nerd or whatever. But if your friends are doing it, right. then like it's a cool thing to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So like the getting the clubs on the ground to be consistent and to like help the kids along the journey of like preparing for these tournaments, I'd say that's probably the most important part of this big project that we're running.
You know, Michael, out of curiosity, like how are you able, like, do you have difficulty getting resources from the school to kind of help push these types of programs?
Mm-hmm. So for the cards, big shout out to the card shops. Like, I would go and ask, hey, do you have commons available? And they would one shop would donate like a whole box worth of commons. And then as well, like, because of the community is so solid, I have people donating cards to the kids. And at the same time, I'm also spending my own money to get cards for the kids. So like, usually like I'll just buy boxes and I'll just give all the comments to the kids.
Just having resources to build from is usually the toughest part for new players.
Yeah, for sure. But one of the big reasons that we have all our tournaments be standard popper is specifically to address that barrier to entry. You know, like the stores are willing to donate all the commons. The kids can build a competitive standard popper deck, you know, just from draft chaff that people donate. Or if they really wanted to just buy a deck all at once, it would probably be like less than $15 if they bought it, you know, piecemeal at the LGS. Yeah. So standard popper is, you know, another big component of the project. I don't think that we would be as successful if we were trying to get the kids to play regular standard. Even draft, which is, you know, when I first started playing, that was where I spent most of my time just playing limited. But, you know, that was because I had an allowance and I was, you know, I had my parents' support, then they were okay with me spending all this money on playing cards. A lot of the kids that are in the clubs aren't in that boat. And so we really wanted to make sure that the tournaments would be accessible to those students. So standard popper has been a big win. It is a pretty simple format. I am worried that one day it's going to stagnate to the point that the kids are going to lose interest, but we haven't. Like, usually if it stagnates, if the kids lose interest in it, that's a sign that they're invested enough that they're going to move on to, you know, playing in.
Yeah, LGS, that was about to be my next statement. If they reach that point, you can probably start talking about, okay, well, maybe now do we include uncommons or whatever. Okay, now you can build that level of stuff. And then, okay, maybe now you can build a deck with, like, up to 4 rares or something.
Actually, we came to a point where my kids that come to club, they show up to FNMs.
Yeah, Mike is very supportive of his kids. He'll have like 6 standard decks built at any given time.
They're all legit decks.
And like just let the kids borrow them to enter FNM. So like,
that's awesome.
In regards to your suggestion of like uncommons legal or certain numbers of rares, like we've thought about it, but I think that would split the community too much. Like if we start scheduling tournaments of certain formats, like the not as invested kids might not have as good of a time or be able to play at all. And so I think like just keeping our focus on the lowest common denominator, most accessible format, then, you know, like the super invested kids, like they'll build a bad brawl deck or a bad standard deck. Some of the kids are even building like modern decks that are nowhere near competitive, but they just want to play. Right. And to me, that's a win. They'll come for standard popper and then start bleeding into the rest of the community on their own accord. And of course we're there to help them and give them suggestions, but I think having the catalyst be the most accessible format is a really important part of the project.
Also another thing.
Well, it's also very appealing to the parents. you know, when it's affordable, it makes it a lot easier for them to want to bring the kids out and help support you guys.
Yeah, for sure. Like last week, I had like three new kids from club this year. They came down and parents just bought them pre-con decks, and like is it, just from there, like even though like they start with pre-con decks, it's the adults that like they're playing against that they'll give them pointers, and like some will just give them cards too.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's always awesome. Yeah.
Like, I remember lent one of my kids, Gruul aggro, and it's funny because then everybody was rooting on him to beat me, and I was playing Bant Scapeshift at the Bant Golos at the time. Sadly, I lost to him, and everybody just gave him prize packs. And this is my career.
That was at one of the FNMs.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
cool.
A legend is born right
yes,
there.
Yes, a story that will never be forgotten. But to bring it back to your question about getting support for the clubs, I think like getting the cards, the community has been very accommodating yeah. for that. But we've also been very lucky in terms of most of our clubs, the teachers, if they have it on campus after school, most of the clubs have been able to get the teachers paid through yeah. usually some sort of nonprofit organization that just runs after school programs. So I think the one that your school is under is 21st Century. I run my club under a local nonprofit called PALS, which is Program for After School Literacy Support. So like the teachers are able to actually get paid for taking the time because, I mean, I don't know how often you talk to teachers or educators, but time is not something that they usually have a lot of. So getting them,
you are not wrong, my friend. You are yeah. not wrong.
So getting our time spent on the club to be compensated, has been a really big boon yeah. for Mike and I, and there's about two or three other guys on the island that have, had, you know, reasonably yeah. consistent clubs. So that, I mean, big shout out to, you know, all those programs yes. for making us or giving us the opportunity to do what we do and actually get paid for it. So
the closer I get to being pro, yeah. getting paid to play Magic.
After School All-Stars is the other big one. They've been a really big help. I think that's a nationwide program. Can we just talk about our scholarship tournaments real fast?
You absolutely can.
Okay, so we started running just regular youth standard popper tournaments, you know, right after Kaladesh came out. And then, or I guess it was right after around Aethervolt yeah. coming out. But then less than, what was it?
I think it was when Dominaria came out.
No, our first one was right after Dominaria. So like a little over a year later, I started a Patreon, and it was more of like an experiment to see like, oh, I wonder if people will pay to support this. Cause prior to that, I was just donating my FNM when I was playing a lot more Magic at the time, but I was just donating my FNM winnings to the prize Same support here. for the tournaments. And so I started the Patreon. We got a couple $100 in support, mostly like local guys that I know personally who wanted to support the project. And then once the Patreon got to a certain point, we started running scholarship tournaments, which is ultimately when the project started, that was the dream to like kind of bring back the JSS to regrow it. We're about to run our fourth scholarship tournament this December, December 14th, for any of you local youth players that are out there listening to this. So that's our fourth one. So we've run three already. Each one we've given away $500 in scholarship to first place, $250 to second place, and they've all been standard popper. Yeah. And just
that's awesome.
Yeah, having the opportunity to run the project and, you know, give kids this opportunity to like have a goal and work yeah. towards it over a period of time in the same way that I know that was a big driving force in my childhood, being able to recreate that experience for today's youth has really been Definitely. The best part of the project.
Seeing the kids grind in those tournaments, oh man, they're nail biters.
Yeah, they get very invested. It's
yeah,
great.
And people may look at that and say like, well, you know, it's only $500. But and for a lot of people, every little bit helps.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
even if that's just like pays for their books and stuff for a semester down the road, like that's still worth it.
Oh yeah. Actually, it's usually, so Mike is at an elementary school and his kids are super invested. A couple of the other clubs are at middle schools, and we see those kids come, you know, semi-regularly. My club is at a high school, and I've had the hardest time, like, getting kids to stay invested because, you know, $500 to a high schooler, like, they have the option of, like, investing this time in playing Magic or getting a job, right? And so getting the scholarship prize, I think, is most appealing to the kids in about, like, late elementary yeah. school, early or in into middle school. Like, it just,
because
you see it light up their eyes, and they're like, I can do what? And then it starts to lose a little bit of its luster to the high schoolers. But, yeah, it's definitely accomplishing yeah. what we're trying to do. So,
yeah. I would still like $500. Who are these high school kids?
Well, yeah.
I think the last one was intermediate school. Yes.
Yeah, middle I think all of our winners so far. No, Julian is in high school.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But all of our first place finishers so far have been middle schoolers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just waiting for mine to make their day.
Yeah, those August Aarons Elementary School kids, like they're becoming real contenders. I think that they will probably have a very good showing in December. They've been putting in the time.
It's really great. You know, there's so many up and coming kids. Some, you know, like Dana Fisher obviously is the youngest person to make a day two to Grand Prix. We have other ones. I think his name's Rhino, who produces content and stuff. Like, there's all these kids getting involved with Magic that I'm just thinking about, you know, 6, 7, 8 years from now. These are probably going to be the kids running the show on the MPL.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that'd be dope.
They're getting started way earlier yeah. than any of us could have even considered getting started.
Oh, yeah. And the community.
And they have opportunities that we didn't have.
Yeah. And I think that's in large part to the community being so robust that, like, you know, when someone makes a big showing in the community, like, there are tons of people there that are going to help them. So, yeah, I think that it's a very good sign that yeah. this generation of Magic players is getting the support and momentum that they are. It's a very healthy sign.
Well, let's hit you guys with some questions. Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in 5 fire questions. So my first one for you guys is, what's been the biggest difficulty you've encountered through this whole process of trying to get it going, getting it promoted? Like, what's been your biggest stumbling block?
You have something in mind, Mike?
To me, it's like getting the information out there. So, like, when I would go to car shops and, like, I would see kids playing, and, like, I would just kind of mention, like, hey, you know, we do have these youth tournaments. And I think if maybe we kind of advertise more at the LGSs, and that'll be big. But, yeah, just getting the information out there, because it's more, like, yeah, I feel like we have our social media outlets, but I feel like not everybody gets to the social media outlets. So, like, maybe if you're to advertise it more on a widespread, I guess.
Yeah, like we have a Facebook, we have an Instagram, and we have a YouTube. And so, like, the kids that are already invested in the tournaments, like, they know to check that. But in terms of, like, reaching new kids, it's really just on the ground.
Yeah.
Hey, tell your friends about what you're doing. That has gotten us the most traction.
Yeah, I think that's a common misconception for a lot of people, you know, and I wouldn't even say just in charitable work, but I think just life in general, when people are trying to promote anything, I think there's an assumption that, okay, well, I'll just advertise in these 2 or 3 venues and everybody's going to see it. But the reality is most people don't. I mean, even if the way algorithms work and social media and whatever, like, they can still be following you or, you know, see you online and not see those particular announcements. Like, so you have to kind of be out there as much as you can, have people talking about it. Like you're saying, post in the local stores or wherever your event's going to be, and just do everything you can to get the word out. I think it's very easy to assume people saw it, but that's not always the case.
People got to see it so many times. Because you think about, you know, your favorite commercial that you think it's funny, and then you think about how many times you don't remember what it advertised. And you've seen it 1,000 times.
There's actually some business research that says that the average person has to, in some way, whether it's hearing it, seeing it, reading an ad, whatever, has to interact with the promotion 7 times before they even act on it. Like, they have to have it come up, it goes top of mind for them, and then eventually, like, when you need that part, you're like, oh, I need to go to Lowe's, you know, because I saw the Lowe's commercial like 10 times, and now I finally need a thing.
Yeah. Because you're not sitting around thinking about the Lowe's, you know, unless you work in that industry.
Yeah, so the trick is really, whatever you figure out, you kind of have to keep it a sustained effort over a long period of time. Even if you're not talking about it, somebody else is talking about it.
Yeah. To kind of piggyback off of Mike's answer, I would say the hardest part from my perspective has just been like trying to get adults, or I guess not even to get, but to find adults that are both interested in magic and who work at a school and who have free time to run a club. That's really the trifecta of like,
that is a very small group of people.
Like the first two groups, you know, play magic and work at a school. Like there's more of them out there than you think. But as I said earlier, like teachers just have so little free time on their hands. So like trying to find someone who, you know, is passionate about the game and, you know, can take the time to start a club and commit to doing it once or twice a week. It is a literal needle in a haystack. And so that has probably been the biggest challenge for me. Just like, you know, Mike here is doing such a great job, and the other most consistent club on the island is run by shout outs to Dave. He's been over at Coppola Middle School. But yeah, like some people might start one, they'll run it for a year, and then, you know, they'll get busy or whatever, which is completely understandable, but just getting the adults on the ground to be excited and being able to like provide a safe place for kids to play, for kids to tell their friends about when, you know, during the day at school, hey, come to Magic Club after school. I think that that is the best way that we've seen growth, but it really all depends on finding a club advisor.
Okay. So my second question, and this is going to be a real hard one for you guys.
Okay. Hope so.
Who is the best player among your kids that you think we'll be seeing at the pro level or maybe at a Grand Prix doing well first?
There's a number of them.
I mean, of all the youth kids that have come to any tournament, right? So there's these two brothers in the Magic community, and they've actually been playing Magic since they were in like elementary school. The Jacobowitz brothers.
Oh, so they've got time in already.
So by the time we started the youth project, like they had already been in the local scene for like 3 or 4 years. You know, like they play Modern, they've gone to Grand Prix and stuff like that. So like they, the older brother, Julian, has come in second in our last two scholarship tournaments. And you know, like they have some connection to Seattle. And so they spend summers in Seattle and this last summer, they were like tearing up the scene over there. So I think like they're the automatic answer, but in terms of like fresh, players who like just found out about the game through our project, I feel like most of them are probably from your club.
So like two of mine, so one is a sixth grader, Jansen, and
Jansen's
one's
in sixth grade.
Yeah. Jansen's in sixth grade and JP is in fifth grade. So, Jansen, I started with him and when he was in fourth grade, so this was 2 years ago. From his growth, let's put it this way, he won the last 3 youth tournaments in a row.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
He knows what he's doing.
We call that a ringer.
Oh, I'm going to be surprised. All the other kids in his club are like, oh, Jansen's the best one. I hope I don't have to play against Jansen. Or like he didn't come to one tournament. And JP was like, oh, Jansen's not here. I might win today. So the kids have identified him as like the one. And he's really been putting in the time, right?
Yeah,
he'll come with you to FNM and play like real standard. So
I remember one time he played Big Boy Magic at one, I forgot what shop it was. And he pretty much went undefeated. In fact, there's nights where he would play FNMs and he played undefeated. And this is him beating me as well. And then
Next
one would be like his cousin JP.
Oh, they're cousins?
Yeah, they're cousins.
I did not know.
So in the last youth scholarship, he was fourth.
Yeah.
And he's a So he's
using a fourth grade.
He was in fourth grade at the time.
Yeah.
So if I were to put anything, it'll be those two.
Yeah, and they've really just been putting in the work, right? Like JP's been working on that same deck for a really long time. Jansen has
been going after them. Pretty much pros at their decks.
Cool. Well, that brings me to my third question. Okay. Just because it's all over social media right now and we're all hating them, are you joining them or getting rid of them? Are you building decks with Oko or no?
Oh, it's funny because I was just talking to Sean earlier.
Mike is trying to play Pioneer, he has a very...
I built Sultai Eldrazi just to shove in Oko.
Boo.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I haven't played them yet. I haven't played with the card yet. So I'm looking forward to playing it. So, this week's FNM, they're going to test out Pioneer. So, yeah, I brewed up a deck. In fact, Jansen and JP, they're going to be playing Pioneer. In fact, a lot of the kids are going to be there playing. So, we're just going to be, we're taking advantage of school time to play test for Friday. Yeah.
That's cool.
This is the best school ever.
At least you have the opportunity to do that.
Yes. Yes, Oko, just abuse them until it gets banned. I mean, that's what we did with our
people get banned in the older formats.
I can't even hate you for it. That's fine.
I've been playing.
It's for the kids, Daquan. You can't hate. It's for the kids.
It's for the kids.
Yeah.
For Kiki.
Oko loves the kids, man.
If I were playing super competitively, trying to qualify for the Pro Tour, I would probably just be playing that Sultai mid-range Oko deck that dominated the arena qualifier that happened this weekend.
Sure.
But that, since I'm not in that boat, I've really, the limited amount of time I have to play Magic, I've just been trying to brew bad decks and see, I wonder if this is halfway decent against Oko, and the answer is always no. But when Throne first came out, I was just okay, new format, even though I don't have any tournaments to prep for, let's just find the best deck. And so I was building a bunch of Oko decks, and it was great. And now that it's just solidly decided that it's the best deck, since I don't have a tournament to prepare for, I'm exploring other areas of the metagame. I hope that it gets banned.
Yep. You know, it's funny because I accumulated two playsets, and my friend was telling me you should just get rid of a set right now because they hit it. You're going to lose a lot of money, so I should get rid of it now.
Nah, it'll hold its price. It's same play vintage.
Well, we'll see what happens to him.
Yeah.
So, Brian, running a little long, but you still got to ask him two questions.
Oh, okay. Well, quickly, and we got two guests, too. They can even try to make it quicker. Y'all talked about playing Magic, since you were very young. If you could tell your young self one thing about your future, what would you tell them?
Oh, man. Oh, jeez.
it's not an introspective question at all.
I got it.
Okay, you go first. Okay. Mine is super niche.
Mine is keep all your cards.
Oh, that would probably
be a good answer.
Buy Black Lotus would probably be a good one.
I started Mercadian Mask. So, I play the Mercenaries.
Yeah.
But keep all your cards.
I would tell myself that also.
$2-$3 at the time. They're whatever it is now.
Yeah. My answer is very specific to the JSS top four. The mistake that I have not forgiven myself for is, so I was playing mono blue control with Vidalkin Shackles. And my opponent was playing white weenie, the Isamaru Savannah Lion deck. And I'm on the draw in game three, and he goes turn one Savannah Lion, and I could have Disrupting Shouled it, pitching in a null, and just brain fart, 16-year-old Sean was just it resolves, and then that just cost me the tournament. So I would tell...
Literally right after you say it, you just look and go, why did I
exactly,
do that?
Exactly, exactly. I look at my hand, and I'm like, there's no reason that should be in play right now. And then it ends up, dealing 10 damage to me, and I lose, by the thinnest of margins. So I would tell previous me to counter the damn Savannah Lion on turn one.
Understandable.
Yeah.
And then, if I was going to make you into a Planeswalker card, what color or colors are you, and how do you generate tokens?
how do we generate tokens or loyalty?
Or loyalty. There you go.
I got tokens. I really like brain. Playing blue, so I would probably either be mono blue or blue black. I think that making a cool. I think like Ashiok was the last time we had like a really cool blue black planeswalker. So I don't know what I would do to make loyalty.
I don't know. I was thinking of bat colored. Because when I got back into playing Magic, I played my color is Bant, blue green white. So if I were to make a planeswalker, oh man, well that's a hard one.
Ooh. Yeah, I feel like if you gave me this question 2 days ago, I still wouldn't have a good answer.
That's what I'm here
that's
for.
That's totally fine.
That's why they're five fire.
You did the hard part by at least coming up with colors that you would be, because I think some people even struggle with that.
I would probably have some sort of loyalty ability that counters spells preemptively, and that would totally not be broken at all.
No, not at all.
Veil of Summer would still probably just beat me up.
I think one would be minus to counter a spell if its controller can't pit X, where X is the Planeswalker's loyalty counters. That'll be a minus.
So you just automatically counter the next spell unless they pay equal to the loyalty? That's interesting.
Then, plus would be
that actually might be a real thing that could go on a planeswalker later. Like I'm impressed.
And you get a check if they do that. We all heard it here first.
Actually, my real answer is my minus ability would be to turn something into a 3/3 elk.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Everything's an elk. Plus, everything's an elk.
Or a Savannah lion, as it were.
Oh God, the salt in the wound.
There you go.
Ouch.
You make a Savannah lion token.
Oh man,
there you
plus,
go.
I would kill a Savannah lion token.
I would say there plus would be might sound busted. Gain one life for each counter, loyalty counter on top the planeswalker.
You do because like
that's mind. Not that bad. Yeah. That's kind of like a Johnny
you
style.
Minus to counter the next spell, then you just plus. So there you go. Thing. Yeah,
I love how much science and how much thought he put into that.
And the ultimate alt would be like create X or whatever tokens where power and toughness equal to where X tokens with power toughness X, where X is the number of loyalty counters on the planeswalker. Ooh, there you go.
Busted.
Okay, now we're getting out of control a little bit.
Now the ban hammer is hovering.
But this is the ultimate, exactly. So I think it's okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, guys, while we got you here, we're gonna kinda after all the fun, we like to kinda close out with a little bit of a serious segment that we call our dinner table all right, time.
I've got my serious face on.
Let's do this.
Yeah, we normally pick a topic that's a little more serious to kinda give people some insight. Generally on like social issues or things with like people of color in different scenarios. But one of the things I think we can talk about is that I don't think a lot of people are aware of how big things like the homeless population and stuff are in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. You guys did your homework.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people. But yeah. And I think a lot of the work that you guys are doing kind of helps prevent that situation for a lot of people. I think them building up social networks, building up social skills, even just building up reading and math skills, I think do a lot to contribute to that. And is that something that comes up in any discussions for you guys ever?
For me, yes. Because I have adults coming and questioning the kids. I guess they just want to validate, like, okay, this is a legit club for the kids. So at JP, at fourth grade at the time, I had him do a whole explanation on the battlefield. It was a whole combat. It was during combat. So I even recorded it and showed it to the faculty and staff one day. And the kid and the teacher were blown away to see the thinking that JP did. Mm, and you have
reading
to
reading the inferencing, making meaning.
Yes. And at the same time, like I even told them that you have to be at least 13 to play the game. And he's in fourth grade. So the thinking level is there, the problem solving is there, and like I guess because all the cards are there, he can see it visually, and it ties into a lot of reading
strategic thinking is a big thing that I think a lot of school programs don't have a lot to assist with.
Absolutely.
So I think you having, just like you're saying, where you kind of had laid out this combat battlefield situation and just seeing somebody talk through that and seeing their understanding of, okay, well, I got to do this because I have this other card and this for next turn. And, you know, that slowly starts to become a way of thinking that applies to other parts of life.
For sure.
That it seems really silly, but I mean, I've watched it when I had my stores, just seeing kids come up, you know, like you're saying, in fourth or fifth grade, and they seem to have so many fewer issues when they get to high school and beyond because they've already learned to think certain ways.
Yes. And it's also what helps is like taking picture of the battle, especially during tournaments. Then we can, so like after the match, we just talk about, hey, you know, this is what the battlefield looked like. Was there a different way you could have made your turn optimal?
Mm-hmm.
So, and like one of the things we, especially when our reading curriculum is sequencing. So like, you know, reading a story, what happens first, second, you know, and so forth. It's just being able to apply the comprehension strategies into the game.
Yeah. Another thing I want to ask too is, what is the like average income for a lot of the kids that are participating in your programs? Because I know on the islands, it can be vastly diverse.
So
yeah,
between one family to the next.
The schools that Mike and I both work at are on the lower socioeconomic status in terms of, you know, income for the average person in the neighborhood. And I think that that's actually the reason why we have been able to secure funding for these after-school programs, because like the nonprofits that are offering these opportunities, you know, a big part of it is, you know, like the curriculum, like rigor and all of that Mike was just talking about is definitely a big part of it. But I think even bigger picture than that, like these organizations recognize just the importance of the kids, like finding a community that they can associate with, right? Finding role models that they can look up to. You know, setting goals, right? Like a big part of the reason that in my personal story, the fact that I had a very clear goal of I want to win JSS Nationals, you know, that provided so much focus for me and allowed me to navigate my life to the point that it is now. And so I think like the communities that we're serving are on the lower socioeconomic end. And so I think that,
we're talking about families that were like 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet. Yeah. And that's pretty big. And like a lot of the kids that come to school, like
food stamps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Free and reduced lunch and all that.
Yeah. I can totally relate, you know, coming from a very poor family, you know, family issues at home, you know, I was fortunate to have collectibles, magic, sports cards, comic books, you know, I had other things that were distracting me from being out on the streets and getting into all kinds of trouble. And even older people that were kind of, you know, somewhat I looked up to some of them, but I think more importantly, some of them were looking out for me, like, which is kind of also what comes with that is people get invested in helping the growth of these other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that gets overlooked a lot too, is these programs that you guys have going do a lot to help build people up. And sometimes just having somebody to turn to or confide in, or even just having those people to kind of take a journey with, keeps them from making those wrong turns.
Yeah, just I think just having a community where there's people there that care about you, right? Like, even if you never speak to somebody unless you're paired against them in a tournament, right? Like, you still know who that person is. Like, you know that they recognize you as an important part of the community, and you do the same for them. So I think really just giving the kids, you know, they have their community of their club at school that they can like get close with and bond with, but then also just introducing them to the larger Magic community. Cause I tell people all the time, I grew up in the Magic community. Yeah. Like that is what shaped so much of my life and my early experiences.
And for me, I think that's what helped the kids, getting them to go out to FNMs. And seeing the adults work with them as well, you just see a lot of like camaraderie with like the kid and the adults, and you just see these rivalries. You know all the kids say, "Hey, you better be Mr. Yui."
It's
just shared goals, all that sportsmanship.
It's so important, I think, you know, to be able to find your tribe. I mean, you know, for me, it was theater. You know, but you were talking about how, hey, you know, so and so is not here this week. Every kid, I think, needs that place where people actually notice that they're not there this week. And oh, not yeah. every kid has that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point. You know, I think a lot of times when you read up on people that have had bad falls in their life, or they turn to drugs, or unfortunately, even suicide in some cases, a lot of times it's about them just not feeling noticed, or they think nobody cares, or that, you know, other people weren't present for them in a moment. And when you're part of these communities and you're going to these events, like, there's somebody there communicating with you, like, you matter for that person. And even if it's just for that 50 minutes you're playing each other, or for the 3 hours you're at that tournament, like, you know, there's a place where you can go where somebody cares, where somebody's going to acknowledge your existence. And I think that alone goes a long way to stop some of those issues.
For sure. Yeah. And yeah, being a part of the community. And I think, like, just having shared goals, right? And shared, you know, everyone is familiar with the story. Everyone is familiar with the format. Everyone is familiar with, you know, all these little aspects of the Magic community. So it, you know, that's how you build connections, right? So I think just having that catalyst is so important to get people to start feeling that way about each other.
Oh, yeah, because, like, I have kids, like, some of the kids from Magic Club joining. Are we having Magic Club today? Are we playing FNM today? That's, like, a great feeling. Like, oh, okay. Oh, well, like, look at the schedule. But yeah, it's a great feeling when just asking.
Hey, at least they want to come do that instead of just... Yeah, at least they want to come do that instead of just fire up the Xbox one more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny too because I have parents who tell me all the time how much it helped them. And like, I have parents who just kind of just got rid of their consoles because then they're more invested into Magic.
Man, that's always awesome. Yeah. So I want to say I appreciate you guys coming by the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I think it's super awesome. I think, you know, if nothing else, I hope people listening see that it is possible to do something like this in their communities, you know, that they can reach out to their schools, they can reach out to their stores. And there's more people that are interested in doing this stuff than most people really think. But somebody has to be the one to take the initiative first.
Yeah.
I have, shout out to Sean.
What I always tell the people that are, you know, I have people approach me every now and then and they're like, hey, I'm thinking about doing something similar. I always tell them, like, having somebody on the ground at the school to be there after school, like, is the most important first piece. If you don't have that, then it's going to be really hard to get momentum in other places. I have heard some success stories of, like, LGSs, like, starting there and then expanding into the schools. So, you know, by all means, this is not the only way to do it, but that's how we got started. And I think that that's a big part of why we've been able to keep going. So, you know, if you're out there and you're interested in, you know, teaching and magic and education and all that, think about starting a magic club and then see where it takes you.
So where can people find you guys online or your group, the MTG 808 Junior?
That's a very good question. So we have a WordPress website, that has text coverage of our tournaments. That is mtg808junior.wordpress.com. We also have a YouTube channel where we kind of do like deck techs and meta discussions and reviews of the tournaments and stuff like that. And which is just MTG808Junior, with no spaces on YouTube. And then we're also on Facebook and we haven't really been too active on Instagram lately, but we're just, if you type MTG808Junior into Facebook, YouTube, WordPress, you can find us there.
Yes.
And then if you want to support the project, we're also on Patreon. So Patreon/MTG808Junior is our page there.
Yes.
Cool. And Brian, where can they find you?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram.
And as usual, I am at Power Dragon, PowerDragn, just about everywhere. Easy to find. If not, you can just look me up by my name. So again, I want to say thanks to both Sean and Michael for being here. That was actually super fun, super informative.
Yeah, thank you again for having us.
Yeah, so on behalf of you guys and Brian, I want to say thank you to everybody. Remember to share our podcast. If nothing else, get one friend to listen to us to help us grow here in the early stages. But wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, I want to say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Thanks. We'd love it if you could follow us at patreon.com/colorofmagic. We're also on Facebook and Twitter under Color of Magic. You can go to our website and see blogs and updates at colorofmtg.com. We also ask if you could share this podcast with your friends. We can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and Podbean. Every little bit helps. And again, thanks for your support.